Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. That's the 12th Hour. Today is October the 1st, 2025, or it is the 11th day of Tishri 2029. We'll start our first Thursday. Our sermon is chapter 33 of Patriarchs and Prophets. It's from Sinai to Kadesh and L.N.G. White. It's based on Numbers 11 and 12. It says, for the building of the tabernacle was not begun for some time after Israel arrived at Sinai. And the sacred structure was first set up at the opening of the second year from the Exodus. This was followed by the consecration of the priest, the celebration of the Passover, the numbering of the people, and the completion of the various arrangements essential for their civil or religious system, so that surely a year, for nearly a year, was spent in the encampment at Sinai. Here, their worship had taken a more definite form, for the laws had been given for the government of the nation, and a more efficient organization had been effective preparatory to their entrance into the land of Canaan, for the government of Israel was characterized by the most thorough organization, wonderful alike for its completeness and its simplicity. The order so strikingly displayed in the perfection and arrangement of all Yahweh's created works was manifest in the Hebrew economy. For Yahweh was the center of authority and government, the sovereign of Israel. Moses stood as a visible leader. Father Yahweh's appointment to administer the laws in his name, from the elders of the tribe, a council of the 70 was afterwards chosen to assist Moses in the general affairs of the nation. Next came the priest who consulted the Yahweh in the sanctuary, chiefs or princes, and ruled over the tribe. Under these were captains over thousands, and captains over hundreds, and captains over 50, and captains over 10s, and lastly, officers who might be employed for the special duties, Deuteronomy 1:15. The Hebrew camp was arranged in exact order. It was separated into three great divisions, each having its appointed position in the encampment. In the center was the tabernacle, the abiding place of the invisible king. Around it were stationed the priest and Levites. Beyond these were encamped all the other tribes. For the Levites was committed, unto the Levites was committed the charge of the tabernacle, and all that pertained thereto, both in the camp and on the journey. When the camp set forward, they were to strike the sacred tent. When a halting place was reached, they were to set it up. No person of another tribe was allowed to come near on the pain of death. The Levites were separated into three divisions. The descendants of the three sons of Levi, and each with a sign, his special position and work in the front of the tabernacle and nearest unto it were the tents of Moses and Aaron. On the south were the Kohathites, whose duty it was to care for the ark and the other furniture. On the north, Merarites, who were placed in the charge of the pillars, sockets, boards, etc. In the rear, the Gershonites, and the hand, the care of the curtains and hangings was committed. For the position of each tribe also was specified. Each was to march and to encamp beside his own standard, as the Yahweh had commanded. Every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard, with the ensign of their father's house, afar off about the tabernacle of the congregation shall they pitch. As they encamp, so shall they sit forward, every man in his place, by their standard. Numbers 2:17. For the mixed multitude that had accompanied Israel from Egypt were not permitted to occupy the same quarter with the tribe, but were to abide upon the outskirts of the camp, and their offspring were to be excluded from the community until the third generation. Deuteronomy 23:7-8. Scrupulous cleanliness as well as strict order throughout the enchantment and its environs was enjoined. Thorough sanitary regulations were enforced. Every person who was unclean for many cause was forbidden to enter the camp. These measures were indispensable for the preservation of health. Let's do that last sentence again. For these measures were indispensable for the preservation of the health of mine so vast a multitude. And it was necessary also that the perfect order and purity be maintained, that Israel might enjoy the presence of the Holy Yahweh. Thus he declares, the Yahweh, not thy Yahweh, walketh in the midst of thy camp to deliver thee. This is not sure the Son of Yahweh walketh in the midst of thy camp to deliver thee and to give up thine enemies before thee. Therefore shall thy camp be holy. In all the journeys of Israel, the Ark of the Covenant of the Yahshua went before them to search out a resting place for them. It's actually the Ark of the Covenant of the Yahweh the Father with Yahshua representing the Yahweh the Father went before them to search out a resting place for them. Numbers 10:33. Born by the sons of Kohath, the sacred chest containing Yahweh's holy law was to lead the band. Before it went, Moses and Aaron and the priests bearing silver trumpets were stationed near, for these priests received direction from Moses. Was to communicate to the people by the trumpet. It was the duty of the leaders of each company to to give the definite direction concerning all the movements to be made, as indicated by the trumpet. Whosoever neglected to comply with the direction given was punished with death. Yahweh is a Yahweh of order. Everything connected with heaven is in perfect order. Subjection and thorough discipline mark the movements of the angelic host. Success can only attend order and harmonious action. For Yahweh requires order and system in his work now, no less than in the days of Israel. All who are working for him are to labor intelligently, not in a careless, haphazard manner. He would have his work done with faith and exactness, that he may place the seal of his approval upon it. Yahweh himself directs the Israelites in all their travels, for the place of their encampment was indicated by the descent of the pillar of cloud, and so long as they were to remain in the camp, the cloud rested over the tabernacle. When they were to continue their journey, it was lifted high above the sacred tent, for a solemn invocation marked both the house and the departure. It came to pass when the ark set forward that Moses said, "Rise up, Yahweh, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee be before thee." And when it rested, he said, "Return, O Yahweh, unto the many thousands of Israel." Number 10, 35-36. A distance of only 11 days' journey lay between Sinai and Kadesh on the borders of Canaan, and it was with the prospect of it speedily entering the goodly land that the host of Israel can return of their march, when the cloud at last gave the signal for an onward movement. Yahweh had wrought wonders in bringing them from Egypt, and what blessings might they not expect now that they had formerly covenanted to accept him as their sovereign and had been acknowledged as the chosen people of the Most High? Yet it was almost with reluctance that many left the place where they had so long encamped. They had come almost to regard it as their home. Within the shelter of those granite walls, Yahweh had gathered his people apart from all other nations to repeat to them his holy law. They loved to look upon the sacred mount, on whose holy peace and barren ridges the divine glory had so often been displayed. The scene was so closely associated with the presence of Yahweh and holy angels that it seemed too sacred to be left thoughtlessly or even gladly. At the signal from the trumpet, however, the entire camp set forward the tabernacle born in the midst, and each tribe in its appointed position under its own standard. All eyes were turned anxiously to see in what direction the cloud would lead. As it moved toward the east, were on the mountain masses huddled together, black and desolate, a feeling of sadness and doubt arose in many hearts. As they advanced, the way became more difficult. Their route by the through the stony ravine and barren waste all around them was a great wilderness, a land of deserts and of pits, a land of drought and of the shadow of death, a land that no man passed through, and where no man dwelt, Jeremiah 3:6, where the rocky gorges far and near were thronged with men, women, and children, with beasts and wagons, and long lines of flocks and herds. Their progress was unnecessarily slow and toilsome, and their multitude, after their long encampment, were not prepared to endure the perils and discomforts of the way. After 3 days' journey, open complaints were heard. These originated with the mixed multitude, many of whom were not fully united with Israel, and were continually watching for some cause of censure, for the complainers were not pleased with the direction of the march, and they were continually finding fault with the way in which Moses was leading them, though they well knew that he as well as they was following the guiding path. Dissatisfaction is contagious, and it soon spread in the encampment. Again they began the time of fresh to eat. Though abundantly supplied with manna, they were not satisfied. So the Israelites during their bondage in Egypt had been compelled to subsist on the plainest and simplest food. But then keen appetite induced by privation and hard labor had made it palatable. Many of the Egyptians, however, who were now among them, had been accustomed to a luxurious diet, and these were the first two to complain that the giving of the manna, just before Israel reached Sinai, Yahweh had granted them flesh in answer to their clamor, but it was furnished them for only one day. A good might as easily have provided them with bread, for Yahweh might as easily have provided them with flesh as with manna. But a restriction was placed upon them for their good. It was his purpose to supply them with food better suited to their wants than the feverish diet under which many had become accustomed in Egypt. For the perverted appetite was to be brought into a more healthy state, that they might enjoy the food originally provided for man, the fish of the earth, which Yahweh gave unto Adam and Eve in the east. It was for this reason that the Israelites had been deprived in a great measure of the animal food. Satan tempted them to regard this restriction as unjust and cruel. He caused them to lust after the forbidden thing, because he saw that the unrestrained indulgence of appetite would tend to produce a sensuality, and by this means the people could be more easily brought under his control. For the author of disease and misery will assail man where he can have the greatest success. Through temptation addressed to the appetite, he has, and to a large extent, led men into sin from the time when he induced Eve to eat of the forbidden fruit, it was by this same means that he led Israel to murmur against Yahweh, and temperance and the eating and drinking, leading as it does to the indulgence of the lower passions, prepares a way for men to disregard all moral obligation. When assailed by the temptation, it has little power of the resistance. Yahweh brought the Israelites from Egypt that he might establish them in the land of Canaan, a pure, holy, and happy people. In the accomplishment of this object, he subjected them to a course of discipline, both for their own good and for the good of their posterity. Had they been willing to deny appetite and the obedience unto his wise restrictions, feebleness and disease would have been unknown among them. Their descendants would have possessed both physical and mental strength. They would have had clear perception of the truth and duty and keen discrimination and sound judgment. But their unwillingness to submit to the restrictions and requirements of the Yahweh prevented them, and to a great extent, from reaching the high standard which he desired them to attain, and from receiving the blessing which he was ready to bestow upon them. Says the psalmist, they tempted Yahweh in their heart by asking meat for their lust. They spoke against Yahweh. They said, and Yahweh furnished a table in the wilderness. Behold, he smote the rock, that the waters are gushed out, and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Therefore the Yahweh heard this, and was wroth. Psalm 78:18-21. Murmuring and tumults had been frequent during the journey from the Red Sea to Sinai. But in the pity for their ignorance and blindness, Yahweh had not then visited the sin with judgment. But since that time, he had revealed himself unto them at Horeb, for they had received great light as they had been witnesses to the majesty, the power, and the mercy of Yahweh. And their unbelief and discontent incurred their greater guilt. Furthermore, they had covenanted to accept Yahweh as their king and to obey his authority. Their murmuring was now rebellion, and as such, it must receive prompt and signal punishment. If Israel was to be preserved from anarchy and ruin, the fire of the Yahweh burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. The most guilty of the complainers were slain by the lightning from the cloud. The people in terror besought Moses to entreat the Yahweh for them. He did so, and the fire was quenched. In the memory of this judgment, he called the name of the place a Taberah, a burning. But the evil was soon worse than before. Instead of leading the survivors to humiliation and repentance, this fearful judgment seemed only to increase their murmuring in all directions. The people were gathered at the door of their tents, weeping and lamenting the mixed multitude that was among them, fell a lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely. the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onion and the garlic. But now our cellar is dried away. There's nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. Thus they manifested their discontent with the food provided for them by their Creator. Yet they had constant evidence that it was adapted unto their wants. For notwithstanding their hardships they endured, there was not a feeble one in all their tribes. For the heart of Moses sank. He had pleaded that Israel should not be destroyed, even though his own posterity might then become a great nation. In his love for them, he had prayed that his name might be blotted from the book of life rather than that they should be left to perish. He had imperiled all for them, and this was their response. All their hardships, even their imaginary suffering, they charged upon him, and their wicked murmurs made the doubly heavy the burden of care and responsibility under which he staggered. In his distress he was tempted even to distrust Yahweh. His prayer was almost a complaint. Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Whence should I have flesh to give unto all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, Give us flesh that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. Yahweh hearkened unto his prayer and directed him to summon 70 men of the elders of Israel. Men are not only advanced in the years, but possessing dignity, sound judgment, and experience, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, he said. He said, that they may stand there with thee, and I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. For the Yahweh permitted Moses to choose for himself the most faithful and efficient men to share the responsibility with him. Their influence would assist in the holding in check the violence of the people and quelling insurrection. Yet serious evils would eventually result from their promotion. They would never have been chosen had Moses manifested faith corresponding to the evidences he had witnessed of Yahweh's power and goodness. But he had magnified his own burdens and services, almost losing sight of the fact that he was only the instrument by which Yahweh had wrought. He was not excusable and indulging in the slightest degree the spirit of the murmuring that was the curse of Israel. Had he relied fully upon Yahweh, the Yahweh would have guided him continually and would have given him strength for every emergency. For the Moses was directed to prepare the people for what the Yahweh was about to do for them. Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and you shall eat flesh, for you have wept in the ears of Yahweh's son, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Yahweh will give you flesh, and you shall eat. You shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it come out at your nostrils, and it be a loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised Yahweh, which is among you. That's Yahshua. For you have despised Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? For the people among whom I am, exclaimed Moses, are 600,000 footmen, and thou hast said, I will give them flesh, that they may eat a whole month. Shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them, to suffice them, or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them? He was reproved for his distress. Is Yahweh's hand short, or wax short? Thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee or not. For the Moses repeated to the congregation the words of the Yahweh, and announced the appointment of the 70 elders, the great leaders, charged to these chosen men, not will serve as a model of the judicial integrity for the judges and legislatures of the modern times. Hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment, but you shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid of the face of man for the judgment of the Yahweh, Deuteronomy 1:16-17. Moses now announced the 70 to the tabernacle. And the Yahweh came down in a cloud and spake unto him, and took up the spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not see, like the disciples on the day of the Pentecost. They were endued with power from on high. For it pleased Yahweh thus to prepare them for their work, and to honor them in the presence of the congregation, that confidence might be established in them as men divinely chosen to unite with the Moses and the government of Israel. Again, evidence was given of the lofty unselfish spirit of the great leader. Two of the 70, humbly counting themselves unworthy of so responsible a position, had not joined their brethren at the tabernacle. But the Spirit of Yahweh came upon them where they were, and they also exercised the prophetic gift. On being informed of this, Joshua desired to check such irregularity, fearing that it might tend to division. Jealousy for the honor of his master, Lord Moses, he said, forbid them. The answer was, envious thou for my sake, with Yahweh that all of the Yahweh's people were prophets, and that Yahweh would put His Spirit upon them. A strong wind blowing from the sea now brought the flocks of quail about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side. Round about the camp and about 2 cubits above the face of the earth, Numbers 11:31, all that day and night and the following day the people labored and the gathering of the food miraculously provided in immense quantity were secured. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers. All that was not needed for present use was preserved by drying, so that the supply as promised was sufficient for a whole month. Yahweh gave the people that which was not for their highest good, because they persisted in the desiring it. They would not be satisfied with those things that would prove a benefit to them. Their rebellious desires were gratified, but they were left to suffer the result. They feasted without restraint, and their excesses were speedily punished. The Yahweh smote the people with a very great plague. Large numbers were cut down by the burning fevers, while the most guilty among them were smitten as soon as they tasted the food for which they had lusted. Hazeroth, the next enchantment after leaving Taberah, a still more bitter trial awaited Moses. Aaron and Miriam had occupied a position of high honor and leadership in Israel. Both were endowed with the prophetic gift, and both had been divinely associated with the Moses in the deliverance of the Hebrews. I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Micah 6:4. Are the words of the Yahweh by the prophet Micah. Miriam's force of the character had been early displayed. When as a child she was beside the Nile, the little basket in which was hidden the infant Moses. Her self-control and tact Yahweh had made instrumental in the preserving the deliverer of His people. Richly endowed with the gifts of poetry and music, Miriam had led the women of Israel in song and dance on the shore of the Red Sea. In the affections of the people and the honor of heaven, she stood second only to Moses and Aaron. But the same evil that first brought discord in heaven sprang up in the heart of this woman of Israel, and she did not fail to find a sympathizer in her dissatisfaction. In this appointment of the 70 elders, Miriam and Aaron had not been consulted, and their jealousy was excited against Moses. At the time of Jethro's visit, while the Israelites were on their way to Sinai, the ready acceptance by Moses of the counsel of his father-in-law had aroused in Aaron and Miriam a fear that his influence with the great leader exceeded theirs. In the organization of the council of elders, they felt that their position and authority had been ignored. Miriam and Aaron had never known the weight of care and responsibility which had rested upon Moses, yet because they had been chosen to aid him, they regarded themselves as sharing equally with him the burden of the leadership, and they regarded the appointment of the further assistant as uncalled for. Moses felt the importance of the great work committed unto him as no other man had ever felt it, for he realized his own weakness, and he made Yahweh his counselor, and esteemed himself more highly and trusted less in Yahweh. He had failed when entrusted with the responsibility of giving evidence of the weakness of his character. By his base compliance in the matter of the idolatrous worship at Sinai, that Miriam and Aaron, blinded by jealousy and ambition, lost sight of this. Aaron had been highly honored by the Yahweh in the appointment of his family and to the sacred office of the priesthood, yet even this now added to the desire for self-exaltation. And they said, "Hath Yahweh indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us?" Regarding themselves as equally favored by Yahweh, they felt that they were entitled to the same position and authority. Yielding to the spirit of the dissatisfaction, Miriam found cause of the complaint in the events that Yahweh had especially overruled. The marriage of Moses had been displeasing unto her, that he should choose a woman of another nation instead of taking a wife from among the Hebrews was an offense to her family and national pride. Zipporah was treated with ill-disguised contempt. Though called a Cushite woman, Numbers 12:1, the wife of Moses was a Midianite, and thus a descendant of Abraham. To personal appearance, she differed from the Hebrews in being of somewhat darker complexion, though not an Israelite. Zipporah was a worshiper of the true Yahweh. She was of a timid, retiring disposition, gentle and affectionate, and greatly distressed at the sight of suffering, and it was for this reason that Moses, when on the way to Egypt, had consented to her return to Midian. He desired to spare her the pain of witnessing the judgment that were to fall on the Egyptians. When Zipporah rejoined her husband in the wilderness, she saw that his burdens were wearing away his strength, and she made known her fears to Jethro. She suggested measures for his relief. Here was the chief reason for Miriam's antipathy to Zipporah. Smarting under the supposed neglect shown to herself and Aaron, she regarded the wife of Moses as the cause, concluding that her influence had prevented him from taking them into his counsel as formerly. Had Aaron stood up firmly for the right, he might have checked the evil, but instead of showing Miriam the sinfulness of her conduct. He sympathized with her, listened to her words of the complaint, and this came to share her jealousy. Their accusations were borne by the Moses and the uncomplaining alliance. It was an experience gained during the years of toil and waiting in Midian. The spirit of humility and long-suffering there developed that prepared Moses to meet with the patience, the unbelief and murmuring of the people, and the pride and envy of those who should have been his unswerving helper. Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And this is why he was granted divine wisdom and guidance above all others, says the scripture. For the meek will he guide in judgment, and the meek will he teach his way. Psalms 25:9. The meek are guided by the Yahweh, because they are teachable, waiting to be instructed. They have a sincere desire to know and to do the will of Yahweh, for the Savior's promise is, if any man will do his will, he will know of the doctrine, John 7:17. And he declares by the Apostle John, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of Yahweh, that giveth unto all men liberally, and that prayeth not, and it shall be given him. James 1:5, but his promise is only unto those who are willing to follow the Yahweh holy. Yahweh does not force the will of any. Hence he cannot lead those who are too proud to be taught, who are bent upon having their own way. As a double-minded man, he who seeks to follow his own will while professing to do the will of Yahweh, it is written, let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Yahweh. James 1:7. For the Yahweh had chosen Moses and had put his spirit upon him, and men and Aaron, by their murmuring, were guilty of disloyalty. Not only unto the appointed leader, but unto Yahweh himself, for the seditious whispers were summoned to the tabernacle and brought face to face with Moses. And Yahweh came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle. Let's see that again. And Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, he came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle. For he was representing his father. Yahshua was representing his father. And called Aaron and Miriam. Their claim to the prophetic gift was not denied. Yahweh might have spoken unto them in the visions and dreams, but unto Moses, unto Yahshua himself, to serve faithful in all mine house. But to Moses, let's read that again, for to Moses, whom the Yahweh the Father himself declared, is faithful in all of mine house, has a nearer communion, and has been granted. With him Yahweh spake not to mouth. Wherefore then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Yahweh was kindled against him, and he departed. The cloud disappeared from the tabernacle in the token of Yahweh's displeasure, and Miriam was smitten. She became leprous, white as snow. Aaron was spared, but he was severely rebuked in Miriam's punishment. Now their pride humbled into dust. Aaron confessed his sin and entreated that his sister might not be left to perish about that loathsome and deadly scourge. In answer to the prayers of Moses, the leprosy was cleansed. Miriam was, however, shut out of the camp for 7 days, not until she was banished from the encampment did the symbol of Yahweh's favor again rest upon the tabernacle. In the respect for her high position and in the grief at the blow that had fallen upon her, the whole company abode in the Hazarah, awaiting her return. This manifestation of Yahweh's displeasure was designed to be a warning unto all Israel, to check the growing spirit of the discontent and insubordination. If the Miriam's envy and dissatisfaction had not been signally rebuked, it would have resulted in a great evil. Envy is one of the most satanic traits that can exist in the human heart, and it is one of the most baleful in its effect, says the wise man. Wrath is cruel, and anger is outrageous. But who is able to stand before envy? Proverbs 27:4. It was envy that first caused discord in heaven, and this indulgence has wrought untold evil among them. For envying and strife there is confusion and every evil work. James 3:16. It should not be regarded as a light thing to speak evil of others or to make ourselves judges of their motives or actions. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. James 4:11. There is but one judge, he who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsel of the heart. 1 Corinthians 4:5. And whosoever takes it upon himself to judge and condemn his fellow men is usurping the prerogative of the Creator. The Bible specifically teaches it as to beware of the lightly bringing accusation against those whom Yahweh has called to act as his ambassador. The Apostle Peter, describing a class who are abandoned sinners, says, presumptuous are they, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of dignity, whereas angels, which are greater in power and might, bring out radiant accusations against them before the Yahweh, 2 Peter 2:10-11. And Paul and his instruction for those who are placed over the church said, against an elder receive not an accusation, but before 2 or 3 witnesses, 1 Timothy 5:19. Who has placed upon men the heavy responsibility of the leaders and teachers of his people will hold the people accountable for the manner in which they treat his servants. We are to honor those whom Yahweh has honored, for the judgment visited upon man should be a rebuke unto all who yield to jealousy and murmur against those upon whom Yahweh lays the burden of his work. This brings the end of our study of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with this song.